Hello, Internet. Welcome to the Assorted Calibers podcast, episode 90. 90, that's a lot of episodes. The second amount of podcast is a little bit for everyone. I am Weird Beard, and we are having a round table tonight. I mean, for many reasons, mostly because Erin, my lovely co-hostess, is feeling very tired and worn out for lots of travel.
Hello, Erin.
Yeah, I'm the little bit for everyone. My gift to you is that I am here. I don't guarantee anything else, although hopefully the hijinks that will ensue from the usual gang of idiots will perk me up.
And the wonderful David produced not one, but two segments for future shows, but at the last minute. Hello, David.
You have no idea how hard it was not to interrupt you when you were doing the Hello Internet part. It was painful. It actually caused pain.
I mean, we're coming off of the blooper reel that was released that started out as, yeah, people interrupt me on the intro. It happens fairly frequently.
But usually it's somewhat unintentional. This was, go on, say something. Go ahead. He's still talking. You can get in there.
Get those high elbows in.
Right. Check block him.
And who I haven't received a segment for yet at all, despite having 2 weeks to do it. Oddball.
I've been told I'm supposed to behave, but in fairness, Ponya isn't here, so...
Oh, ooh. And bad behavior is still behavior.
This is true.
It's totally true.
And I've already tempted fate once tonight.
Oh?
What is the tempt of fate?
I went to the local gun shop with gun range after work to try out my most recent purchase, a Beretta M1951.
Yes.
With the
frame-mounted safety.
Yes, it has a frame-mounted safety and doesn't have an exposed trigger bar.
It's considerably better than the crap that you carry most of the time.
Shots fired!
I hate the 92 so much.
I could forgive that, but your derision for the PPK, that's just sad.
And in the used cabinet, you know, as you do after you go shooting, you have to go look at all the fun things to pet.
Go kick mm-hmm. the tires, understood.
And they have a Beretta 92 LTT, used but in excellent shape for $850.
What is the LTT?
The Langdon Tactical tricked out 92.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that one. My gun shop got a couple of used guns in. One I was very tempted by. The one I was tempted by was an early 1960s flat latch Model 36 Smith & Wesson.
Mm.
Yes. For those who are not sure what the heck I'm talking about, the cylinder release button on the Smith & Wessons, now it's kind of this contoured dished surface, but back in the day, it was just like a staircase step called the flat latch, and there are not nearly as many of those, so they're much less common. But it had aftermarket rubber grips, and when I took those off to clean it, there was a little bit of rust underneath, which was sad. Otherwise, remarkably good condition considering its age. The other one is the practically new in box, but it's not new, is the SIG 232
mm-hmm.
380. And they brought it in for, they should be ashamed of themselves for offering that little to the customer.
I mean, it is a Walther PPK clone.
And there we are. That's what I mean.
It is a superior Walther PPK clone in the sense that it is has a decocking lever on the frame like a Sig Sauer, though it also has the heel release like the Radom P64, which is like the hottest penis of hot garbage. It is so much garbage of the PPK. It is like the worst version of the PPK that it's gone around to. I like it a lot. But
the PP series has a push button magazine release on the frame.
Yes, but the Radom P64 and the Steg 230 and 232 have heel releases.
Yep, and this is the stainless model that they mm-hmm. got in, and it's literally it's in the box with the paper, spare magazine, everything for an obscenely low price. And if I can just put it aside for a week or so, I will pay for it. I mean, and then I'll bring it home.
Yes. See if you put a down payment on it and have them hold it. A good faith payment.
They don't do that for employees. They do a 30-day layaway for customers, but we don't get any dibs on any used guns. They have to be there for 2 weeks.
Well,
but they can get accidentally shifted to the back of the cabinet and not put out.
Yeah, that's a friend of mine who works at a certain large gun store that has a policy where if a gun languishes in the case for too long, they mark it down. I'm not sure if they mark it down just for employees or mark it down for everyone, but essentially they lower the price as to get rid of it faster, because if it's been sitting there that long, it's taken up too much space. And yep. He was definitely has seen a few things that he has gone down the, oh yeah, this accidentally went back into the warehouse for some strange reason.
Sorry about where it sat for several months.
Yeah. Oh, and then magically I discovered it on the day where it suddenly got to the part where now it's at the discounted price. And you know what? Screw it. I'll take it.
Yeah.
And a friend of ours is seriously talking about getting a Derringer for deep carry, and specifically a 38 special Derringer for deep carry. And I'm trying to tell him that's a horrible, horrible idea.
Yeah, he should get the 45-70.
Absolutely.
Again, when you look at a 38 special Derringer, if you got a Smith & Wesson J-frame, you would have 5 shots instead of 2. And it would be able, and you would be able to reload it
in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah,
and it's only slightly bigger.
I mean, I consider the Bond Arms Derringer is just like the non mobile cylinder North American Arms, where it's just you're going to shoot it, and when it's empty, it's done. It's like the old cap and ball revolvers. If you shoot it dry, you have an option. You can drop it on the ground or reholster it before you draw the next one.
Mm-hmm. Have a bandolier of Bond Arm Derringers.
Well, I mean, that was Brace. Why you see some like old West gunfighters where they would have like a gun on each hip and then one tucked into the belt.
The mm-hmm. technical is term is a brace of pistols.
Exactly.
I missed that.
A brace.
Yes.
Yeah.
The pirates with the single shot black powder, they would have, I mean, there was, I remember there was one pirate, I forget which one, would go aboard an enemy ship with 6 or 8 pistols.
I think that was Blackbeard.
Yep. I believe you're correct.
And he would set his beard on fire.
Well, no, yes, he wouldn't. Would. He wouldn't set his beard on fire. He would like
twists of cannon of a fuse.
Yes, right? Yes. Well, I didn't know if it was fuse or if I didn't know if it was like match lock. Yeah, but the same
which
sort
is
of
the
thing.
Same thing, basically.
Yeah.
No, because cannon one is slow and one is fast. But either way, I digress.
Match cord.
Yeah, match cord is supposed to essentially last like an entire watch, and mm-hmm. then and cannon fuse is supposed to go off relatively soon. you don't want to be like, all right, stay right there for the next 6 hours,
motherfudge.
Well, you just cut it shorter then.
Although I believe there were there have been a couple documented instances where folks actually did just that while they retreated, and so the firearms went off at odd times, a while after they left, so the enemy was confused about whether or not they had actually left or not.
Oh yeah,
hilarious.
Well, unless you're on the wrong spot,
so.
Then it was Aaron, just funny to the other people.
Mm-hmm. You are exhausted. I understand. You said you don't want to talk about it, but where were you?
Well, it's not that I don't want to talk about it. It's just I don't have a whole lot of energy. So 2 weekends ago, the weekend of Valentine's Day, before Valentine's Day, I flew out to Utah Utah is a great place and I love visiting, but oh my God, the flight. Life, the Universe, and Everything Writers Symposium. And the point of LTUE, it is a convention and you get to meet some of your favorite authors, and that's probably what keeps it going. It was founded coming up on 40 years ago, which was really before the internet, or maybe perhaps before the internet was in everyone's house.
I would say 1980. I would consider that before what we know of as the internet.
Anyway,
yeah. I was there.
Anyway, the idea is you have writers, and writers don't know everything because it's not possible for anyone to know everything. And so the convention assembles panels of subject matter experts so that the authors can ask people questions in order to get it right. And so if you're writing military fiction, you can ask military people about military things, which was the Jarhead Jargon panel, all the different terms and terminologies that military people use. And so I was on that panel, and I was on a couple of gun panels, and all right, I think I'll get into this. But the idea is we'll bring them together and the audience will ask questions and we'll answer it, and hopefully they'll come away enlightened. And that made sense back in the day. Now that there's the internet, Google, YouTube, I'm not entirely sure why people need it, but I'm happy to be part of it. So I was a participant on three panels and a moderator on the fourth. And I've got some stories, and hopefully it won't take too long. The first panel I was on was Murder, Manslaughter, and Self-Defense, How the Law Responds to Killing. And it was another, using guns panel like I was on last year. And last year, it was me, Law Dog, and Old NFO. And the moderator just, he was pro-gun, but he was basically, all right, let's just talk about things. And he really ran the panel. This time, well, let me back up a bit. I'm sorry, I'm scattered. So Law Dog, you should know him. He's been a sheriff's deputy for a long time. Now he's like a lieutenant or something. The man knows guns. He knows self-defense. He knows the law better than most cops.
Taint chicken, emu.
Yeah. Old NFO, I mean, I don't know really what his history is in law and self-defense, but, he knows a lot of things about using guns because he was in the military. And I felt completely outclassed. It's like, hi, I'm here, Schmucky the Clown. I'm just an enthusiast. But a year's worth of practice has really helped. And then I got on this year's panel, and I'm looking and I'm going, what the heck happened? Did somebody drop out? Because I was the most qualified person on the panel, and that shouldn't happen. So,
which panel was that?
Again, Murder, Manslaughter, and Self-Defense, How the Law Responds to Killing.
And
yes? Okay. No, ask your question.
There are all these people with legal backgrounds and military backgrounds.
No. That's the thing. There was no one there who was law enforcement or...
Oh, I my brain took a hiccup. I thought Law Dog was on that panel.
No,
sorry.
No, that was okay. Last year. So this year, I'm there. There is Jason Fuesting, who is an author and a Navy guy and a gun owner. And I don't mean to sell him short, but I don't remember much in what he said. There is a gentleman who, bless him, he looked, he had that sort of deer in headlights look of what the hell am I doing here, which maybe I had last year, because his specialty was medieval law. And so on the one hand, I'm going, yes, I can absolutely see what you're doing here. For someone who is writing historical fiction or fantasy, you are the person to talk to. But I also know most of the people are going to talk about modern day law, and he was just out of his depth and he acknowledged it. And then there was a woman who worked for the Utah, I'm blanking on the term. She was part of the legal division, but she was not a lawyer. She worked on the committee that went, okay, this person has been found guilty. Let us now make a recommendation for their sentence. And so, okay, that's interesting, but not really prepared for a lot of the questions. And I'm going, oh my God, I am actually the most well-versed on self-defense law here. How the hell did this happen? And I felt bad, and so our moderator, he tried very hard, but he was painfully shy, and he had a stammer. And the way these panels usually work is that the moderator will give you some seed questions, and we'll start off and get the debate going. And then when things are going nice and God, where's my brain? Anyway, past a certain point, it's like, okay, things are going, and now we'll call on the audience and get some audience participation. And this poor fellow, he was so intensely uncomfortable, and I do not mean to be insulting, but imagine Fluttershy in full I'm scared mode and stammering. I honestly believe here's what happened, because this guy was part of the con staff. And I've met him before, and he's a lovely guy, but he's painfully shy. And I think what happened was that they had someone else who had agreed to be the moderator, and then that person had to cancel due to illness or other things. And so someone from the convention had to come in and moderate it, and he drew the short straw. Because usually the moderators know something about the topic, and I don't feel like this gentleman knew anything about the topic.
So he was put in a really awkward position.
He was. And so by about the second question, there was just, it wasn't a mutiny, it wasn't a mercy killing, but it was just sort of a, okay, we've got this. And I kind of started it because there was someone who really needed to ask a question, and we were waiting silently for the moderator to ask the third question. And I just went, this is not working. And my game master reflexes kicked in, and I just called on the guy. Yes, sir, you have a question. And he asked. And at that point, just everyone went, okay, Aaron's in charge now. And I was calling on people and answering questions. And I knew that I did the right thing, because at no point did the moderator object or try to get it back or pull me aside later and say, how dare you do that? And it was after that, it was great, and we had a great discussion. But still, it's like, God, the fact that I was the person who's talking about case law and explaining castle doctrine versus stand your ground, and it's like, isn't there a lawyer who can do this? I felt really bad for the medieval guy. He did get some good questions, but there was one point when we were talking about something about how, okay, even if you're found innocent in a self-defense shooting, you may never get your gun back, because right, certain anti-gun states will just hang on to it for as long as possible. You'll have to get your lawyer to try and petition to get it back. And then I threw to him, because it's like, hey, I know a way he can chime in. And so I said, and this attitude is not common. In fact, we saw it in old English history with the concept of the deodand, right? And then he gives me this horrible drowning deer look, and he's like, I don't know what that word means.
Oh no.
Oh no.
And I go, oh God, I'm so sorry.
I just threw this guy under the bus by trying to be nice.
Yeah. Well, the reason he didn't know about it is someone else in the audience piped up, and apparently it was before his area of study. But the very short version here, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, but you'll get the idea, is that the weapon that is used to commit the crime is also guilty of murder, and therefore it needs to be destroyed because it shed the blood of a human being. And we still have a lot of that to this day. You know, this gun killed somebody, so we can't resell it. We've got to destroy it because it carries original sin.
We talked about this in an earlier show, because I remember you mentioned that there was an actual case where they destroyed a locomotive.
Mm-hmm.
Because it killed somebody?
Because someone got hit with the train.
So.
Oh yes, I think I remember that conversation.
So let me try and wrap this up here. So that was a good panel, and then the next panel was Gun Culture in America. You know, it's like nothing but gunnies. Had a great time, and in both those panels, I was able to talk about Pink Pistols and Operation Blazing Sword. So yay, business trip. Then Jarhead Jargon. And I'm honestly not sure how I got in there. Maybe they just needed someone. But one thing I've noticed is that they don't want the panel full of subject matter experts. They do want some enthusiasts, just so that the audience has someone to relate to and balance it out. I guess so that people don't get like deep into jargon and whatever. And that's probably how I got in there. And you know, I'm well spoken, and they know me, and I can tell some interesting stories because my dad was in Vietnam and he did a lot of stuff with the Cold War, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I can go into more detail, but the audience is probably getting tired of hearing my voice. But I want to tell
highly unlikely.
Well, bless them. But I do want to tell a short story about the final panel of the convention. And it was called Sharing Your Stories, but it really should be titled How Not to Turn People Away by Being an Absolute Fanboy About Your Particular Fandom.
Ooh.
I mean, they didn't specifically say that, but that was what I read into the topic, and because I was the moderator, by golly, that's what we were going to talk about, because I thought this was something that was useful and interesting and relevant, and bless them, I had a great crew, and they just ran with it. So this is my first time moderating ever, unless you count the previous day when I took over and answered questions. Let's see, we were sitting down, but it was like 1 or 2 minutes before we started. And I got them all together, and I said, all right, look, gang, I'm going to try something kind of different. So, you know, in like the first few minutes. So it's like, trust me, don't freak out, okay? Okay. And so it hit the o'clock that we were about to start. I had the mic, because I'm the moderator, and I'm supposed to introduce this. And I started out, and I said, hi, my name is Aaron Paulette. And for the next 30 minutes, and this was a 45-minute panel, and for the next 30 minutes, I'd like to talk to you about my original character from My Little Pony called Powder Flash. Now Powder Flash is a unicorn, and she makes fireworks and gunpowder, and her cutie mark is an exploding firework, and I just sort of rambled like that for a bit, and people started to shift uncomfortably, and their eyes glazed, and right when we got to what I felt was maximum discomfort, but before people got disgusted and left, I said, and that feeling that you're feeling right there, that's what we don't want to have when we share our fandoms with other people. Because if we talk at them instead of to them, they will get uncomfortable, they will be turned off, and we lose a fan. And so that is actually what this panel is about.
Nice.
And so I want to thank my panelists for putting up with that. And let's have a discussion on how to share with them without, you know, inflicting it upon them. And it was a great panel. And the funniest thing, there was a woman in the front row, and she had no crap, like full on Polaris green hair. And, you know, I start mentioning ponies, and her eyes just bug out at me like, holy crap, what's going on? And it was just like, oh, that was beautiful. That was exactly the reaction I wanted. And so afterwards, I thanked her for it. As I said, your reaction was perfect. And she looked at me and she went, you went full brony on me, dude. So I think
go full pony.
Yeah, I think she's had some issues with bronies in the past, oversharing their fandom. And so I like touched a nerve, but
that object lesson brought back some unpleasant memories.
Apparently so, but
trees began speaking Vietnamese.
Or the snowdrifts finish.
Welcome to the rice fields, mofo. So I had a great time, and so that's the end of that story, and that's what I did in Utah 2 weeks ago. And now I'm going to take a break and let you boys talk about other things and get my throat back. And then I can talk about what I did last weekend at the Libertarian Convention.
Hooray.
Hooray.
Huzzah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to talk so much.
Nothing to apologize for.
Okay.
Well, I'll take the scepter real quick because I don't want to go in depth on my week. But I was in Florida. Unfortunately, I did not get a chance to meet up with poor Aaron because
you were in Florida the week I was in Utah. What the heck?
I'm getting a sense of deja vu here.
Yeah, I was gonna say, did this happen before?
I'm pretty sure it did because I went to LTUE last year. And I'm guessing he came down for a vacation exactly the same time.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same time. This time we did it so it lined up with the school vacation up here. But unfortunately, well, for our daughter, because we're good parents, it was a vacation and she had a great time. But unfortunately for us, it was not a great time because my father-in-law is having some health issues, and so. We were down to see him and help my mother-in-law, my stepmother-in-law. I don't really know the notation of it. My other unrelated to me father, who is from India, just pointed out. He just introduced people. This is my brother. It was, well, we would say brother-in-law, but he's like, no. My child married his daughter. He is my brother. And so I'm like, you know what? I like the cleanness of that. Yeah, so we were helping my father-in-law and my mother-in-law out while we were down there, and just it was not a whole lot of fun for me, and definitely not a whole lot of fun for my poor wife, and so that was that. But my daughter had an absolute great time. At one point, she spent 3 consecutive hours in the pool. And then I'm trying to remember if it was the same day that she played bingo at the hotel. Oh God! I sent a picture to my mom. Like, look, I'm paying bingo. I despise the game. But yeah, she had a whole lot of good times. Not so much good times, but also she had a whole lot of good times, which means it was exhausted when she got home. So, the weekend was also horrible in the fact that my daughter was tired and cranky, and my wife is actually currently out on a business trip. Like literally she was like out of Logan Airport for like 48 hours. She had a furlough and then she was back on an airplane. And so, yeah, but now she is blissfully sleeping and not grouchy anymore. So, and I'm doing a podcast. I'm feeling much better now.
You're back to your real life.
Exactly. This is good. Though actually to get another woe is I was planning on I was hoping for 2 audio fisks. I've got a bunch of stuff to do up, and I'm like, ooh, look at this. I got, you know, it's Monday. The wife is gone. The kid is gone. All right. I'm going to buckle down and I'm going to work on some weird audio fisks. Well, when we got home on the weekend, the first piece of mail my wife opens was a notice from our bank that said that our mortgage payment was late and we would soon be forwarded on to a collection agency if we did not pay up.
And, holy crap.
Yeah. Wait. And this was on either a Saturday or Sunday. It was on a Saturday. And so, yeah, the banks weren't open. Or when she finally opened it. And so it was one of those, like, she was like doing what she could online and figuring out what the heck was going on. And she found the essentially we keep our money in one bank and our mortgage is held by another bank for various reasons that will be too boring to discuss here, but.
Well, I'd say that's just good practice. I mean, you don't really need your mortgage holder to know exactly how much you have and what you can afford.
Well, it's actually not for that reason. It's actually the bank that holds our mortgage is the small town local bank, and it's literally just like the one office. It is a standalone bank, and essentially they are like, yeah, we hold the mortgage, and yeah, we promise we will never sell the mortgage, and it's gonna we are always going to hold the mortgage. The title to your home will be in this bank forevermore until you pay it off, and then you get the title.
Wow, because my local bank, when I bought the house I'm sitting in, sold my mortgage the day we closed.
Almost all literally, of them do.
Yeah, literally the paperwork was in with the closing.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this bank is the bank that like my wife has had her money in ever since Massachusetts, and it is has like branches all over the state. And so therefore it's got like all sorts of like, it's not quite like bloated gigantic like Bank of America huge, which actually, honestly probably isn't actually all that bad, but you know, it's nice in the fact that like we can use ATMs anywhere, and there is a branch nearby, and it's much more convenient for the holding of money. That's why we do that. But essentially we've got it set up that every month the bank, per our request, takes money out of our account, cuts a check, and then mails it to the other bank. And it turned out that from my wife's research, they cut the check and they sent the check, or she wasn't sure if it was a check or a wire transfer, but the money had left one bank and never arrived at the other. And then, and then she promptly left Sunday morning. And then now Monday morning, the phone rings while I'm making bread. God damn it. And so I am, and they're saying, all right, cool, it's here. And so now enters the weird twist of I'm organizing, I'm dealing with stuff on the one bank trying to talk to another bank, but because of privacy laws, the banks can't talk to each other. They can only talk to me. So I have to talk to one and then talk to the other and tell the other what the first one told me. And all right, I need to go talk to somebody in the finance department to see if they've got the check or what happened and all that. Plus this is all stuff that my wife was doing the work on the day before. And I really wasn't paying attention to it because I was watching the kid, and needless to say, in the end, we found out that probably the post office ate the check, and our mortgage holding bank will probably get a grease stained envelope that's all shredded up and a little note of apology and that you can't sue us because we're the post office and we have immunity. I've dealt with this before. Yeah. But so essentially we put a stop payment on that. And then I went to the bank and actually wrote them a check right there, so that I could say, here is the money. I'm handing it to you physically. Give me a receipt. And so we're all set. But that like burned most of the day, which totally sucks. But podcast.
Did you get a chance to listen to either of the segments I uploaded?
No, not yet. I downloaded them. That's as far as I got.
Okay.
And I was actually too busy kicking bad anti-gunners in the balls, because that's what I needed.
Unfortunately, only metaphorically, not literally.
Yes, only metaphorically. But you know what? I wouldn't want to actually kick somebody in the balls physically. That's I've got too much empathy for that to be cathartic.
Depends on who it was. I mean, you really couldn't do that to Mike Bloomberg unless you crouch down first. I have a particular dislike for Mike Bloomberg as a former prisoner.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should get into that, but unless somebody else wants to grab the cog, I would like to briefly talk. I would like Aaron to talk about the Libertarian convention first.
If her voice is back.
No, go ahead. Let's talk about Mini Mike.
Okay, yeah. Well, speaking of getting kicked in the balls,
no,
the I tuned debate. In for the debate.
I did not, because I like food. But I spoke to my father this weekend, and he and his wife watched the debate.
Now, Aaron literally sent me a text message saying, I can hear you masturbating from here.
I did not say that to my father, obviously. Not that kind of relationship. But we talked about that a little bit, that basically, yeah, they took out all of their Trump hate on Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm. Well, Warren literally, I don't know if she tweeted it or said it, but it was something like, watch us. Oh, God, now that I'm trying to do it, it's failing me. But it's like, you know, watch how we're going to stand up to a billionaire bully from New York by standing up to a billionaire bully from New York, or something like that. The quote is actually a lot more calling out, but it was, yeah, we're going to show you how we defeat Trump by kicking the crap out of Bloomberg.
Yeah, I've got no problem.
And they did.
Yeah. And so, I mean, also the interesting thing is that, again, I'm not saying this as someone who has any love for Trump, but I will say all of the things that they accuse Trump of doing, they actually have hard evidence of Mike Bloomberg doing. I mean, it's one of those, Trump has the grab him by the pussy line, of which he states, and you know what? Guess what? It is two dudes just talking. And let me tell you, as a dude who talks, yeah, I've said a whole bunch of crap that I've never done. And so, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I must say that Trump, as someone who does not smoke or drink, does appear to get his pleasures on with the fairer of the sexes. So I'll just leave it at that. And also certainly holds marital vows at a bare minimum. And so they're kind of a marital suggestions.
More of a guideline, really.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Versus like Mike Bloomberg, like literally saying, I have a girl in every town and had paid out God knows how much to various women to
keep their mouths shut.
Yeah. To keep their mouths shut. Mm-hmm. And I must say, while hearing all that and actually reading up on what hard evidence we actually have, because of course they were talking about a lot of it, and again, debates, they don't have fact checkers live on there. Don't know how much of this was true, but looked up a lot of that stuff. And to tie it into the whole gun thing, hearing Bloomberg's proclivities and knowing what we know about Shannon Watts, that really got me thinking. I'm just saying. Let's just say Shannon Watts would find a more wealthy, more powerful man, and then her marriage would suddenly end, and then she would very soon marry the other guy. And so she hasn't yet married Michael Bloomberg, so therefore the accusation does not stand.
Okay, so here's actually, it isn't the one that I found, but here's something that Elizabeth Warren said, either, I guess, during the debate or afterwards. I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, and I love the questions about the sexual harassment cases against him and the NDAs, and his response of first off, let me talk for my full minute and a quarter, okay? As nobody was interrupting him, and
he's just eating up the time.
Yeah
and I've got to appreciate the maybe they didn't like the joke that I told them, and the entire audience groans. I mean, there's the thunderous applause from Beto O'Rourke saying that he's going to take away the most popular rifles in America.
Mm-hmm.
And there is the Michael Bloomberg trying to defend him sexually harassing employees of his, and it's one of those like, yeah, no, we're not going to give you any latitude. So that made me feel very good. It's one of those like, all right, for my own personal political statement is that I was raised a Democrat and decided that probably wasn't for me. And then the natural swing of the pendulum was when I moved to Massachusetts. Massachusetts has voter registration when you get your driver's license. So one of the first things when I became a Massachusetts resident was they registered me to vote, like right then and there. I need to get my driver's license so I can drive here and start doing, legal resident activities here. And immediately said, all right, we're going to register you. What party would you like to enroll in? And I just said, you know what? This is a mostly a Democrat state, and it is a state that I look down on from my lovely state of Maine. You know what? Put me on as a Republican. Just really just as a big middle finger, mostly to Ted Kennedy.
I remember when mentioning Ted Kennedy that when – what was his name? After Ted Kennedy died, Brown?
Yeah, Scott Brown.
Ran for that and running as a Republican, and that's Ted Kennedy's seat. No, actually, it's the people's seat.
Mm-hmm.
Was the comeback? And I'm like, damn.
And I gotta say, Scott Brown. He ran a wonderful campaign. I really appreciate it. He's the first politician for me that I donated money to. And then he got elected senator and broke every single one of his campaign promises
first week.
I mean, just amazingly well. And I had said to myself, oh my God, you know what? He is terrible. You know what? I'm actually, come the next election, I'm going to vote for the Democrat, because if he gets reelected, he is that much closer to becoming entrenched. Ted Kennedy was never going to lose that seat. Ted Kennedy had to die in office and nonpartisan. And
he took his damn time.
Yeah, he did. And then, you know, see also John McCain. I mean, it's a nonpartisan statement. If someone's been in office for a huge amount of time.
He also took his damn time.
You see also FDR. I mean, after he'd had his third presidential term, it was only going to be Coffin that was going to get him out of the office.
Yep. And after he did three terms, everyone's like, you know, maybe we should stop at two.
Yeah. And so I said, look, I'm going to vote against him for whoever runs against him, because at least that person will not, you know, will be the rookie when they're up for re-election. And then Elizabeth Warren ran against him, and I went, you know what, I'm going to cast another vote for Scott Brown.
Yep.
So I really don't like Elizabeth Warren. I am very unhappy with her, really everything except for her kicking Mike Bloomberg in the balls. She did an excellent job with that.
She did.
I hope you cleaned your boots, Madam Senator. That was a good time, and I'm looking forward to Super Tuesday, because that will be again before this debate. Michael Bloomberg called for all the Democrats that weren't Bernie Sanders to drop out of the race and endorse him so he could beat Bernie Sanders.
And
he hasn't been on a ballot yet. And note again,
well, he hasn't paid enough.
Joe Biden, the front runner.
When the check clears, he'll be on the ballot.
Yeah, Joe Biden was the front runner. He was God Emperor of the Democrat Party. He was the one to defeat. And he is just getting his ass kicked. It's one of those, like, he's the front runner. Well, not really.
No.
And so
he's the sacrificial goat.
And so essentially what Bloomberg was saying was, all you people drop out. And then just idly twiddle your thumbs through two primaries before I even show up. Oh, what a classy guy that Mike Bloomberg is. Kick him, because he's running. He's self-financing his policy, his campaign, saying I'm not beholden to special interests.
Mike, who else said that?
You are the special interest. He is the anti-gun lobby.
Well, there have been many people that have postulated that the real reason why he's running is just to be able to skirt the financial laws, where it's like, oh, well, if I'm running, I can spend as much of my money as I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I see all that. I really do think that he's in it to win it. He's way too much of an egomaniac to.
Oh,
well, remember what they said about Trump. When he
was about to say that
he was just doing it to get things worked up, and then his natural competitiveness and desire to dominate kicked in, and suddenly he's like, oh crap, I'm really president.
This is literally the third time today I've heard this, because you did it on the blooper reel, and then it repeated on the blooper reel.
And we're going to repeat it again.
Yeah.
And this should go on the blooper reel twice.
No, this is the actual show.
Yes, but this part.
But except for, again, as I said on the blooper reel, unlike Michael Bloomberg running on finance laws, that Donald Trump doing it just to stir up interest with The Apprentice was actually true.
Right. I mean, one thing I think it's extremely important to remind people about Michael Bloomberg is, you know, people talk about how Trump feels he's above the law. Yet when you look at his real estate dealings, and I'm not a huge Trump fan. I'm a New Yorker. It's kind of hard to be a Trump fan. But with his real estate dealings, that is a very, very carefully watched industry. And if he had actually gone too far beyond the realm of the allowable, he would have been brutalized legally. I mean, and there were a couple of things where he pushed things just a smidge and got like a fine here or there, but it was nothing major. And so but Michael Bloomberg, I don't know how many people know this that are in our audience, but New York City has mayoral term limits.
Mm-hmm.
Mayors are limited to 2 terms. Michael Bloomberg served 3 terms as mayor. After his second term was coming to a close, he declared he was running for a 3rd term. Now, there is a aspect of the law that the incumbent mayor finishing up a 2nd term can petition the city councilor, whatever their name is, for an exemption from the term limit and run for a 3rd term. And that can happen. No, he waited until the commissioners completed their session and then announced he was running for a 3rd term. So he didn't just ignore the law. He rubbed their noses in ignoring the law. Is that really the kind of person you want to give executive power to?
Yeah. And again, he served 3 terms as mayor, and his successor, Bill de Blasio, is only going to get 2 terms.
Which is too many.
I mean, his presidential campaign is a prime example of why that is absolutely true.
Okay, and since you gave the leading line, wait, he's running for president?
Nope.
But I'm hey.
Not anymore. Again, the line about Eric Swalwell, that fart lasted longer than your presidential campaign.
if only it would destroy their political lives when that happened. But sadly, it doesn't.
So do you have anything else, or is Aaron ready for libertarian talk? Because I want to hear about Vermin Supreme.
Okay. So, what was that, Oddball?
Oh, I was going to say, you know, I can complain about what happened with me last week if Aaron needs to save her voice some more.
All right. What happened last week?
So, at work, we got dumped on with the rest of our normal stuff. We've been informed that we're taking over not one, but 2 centers. And we have to do all of the IT legwork for actually converting everybody's computers and changing everybody's accounts and all that. In theory, by April 1st. While at the same time, we've got a couple centers that we still haven't been given the proper time or resources to properly completely convert, and they've been with us for a couple years now, and they're down to, they had, between the two of them, they had 5 legacy servers, and only one of them is running now, and we're still being told that needs to be put on the back burner. And one of our branches, we discovered that the people that are running them are horribly insecure to the point that there is a vanilla FTP server just kind of running.
Yeah.
Panya.
Yes. If
missile time.
Are you being hit with cat missiles?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Where's the frying pan? Missile time! Missile
it time. Wasn't my idea. I didn't do it.
I'm horrified.
But yeah, if you're not a techie, you should understand that reaction. It is legitimate as to how bad that is. And oh yeah, in the middle of this, apparently I'm buying a new house. So I've been a little busy.
I remember buying a house. It was no fun. But thankfully, Oddball, Anheuser-Busch makes a thing called King Cobra. It is your friend.
Interestingly enough, so does Colt.
Yes, they do.
Yes. Yes, they do.
They're also a good friend.
Also a good friend, yes.
My name's Weird. Although, I like revolvers.
and I have kept up my tradition of buying guns for less than I've spent on knives. But in this case, I bought a Beretta M1951 in rather good shape for about $200.
Nice. Considerably better than those 92s you carry around.
Yeah.
Shots fired.
Not if that locking block breaks.
Yeah.
Which happened to some poor guy on the range.
Oh.
He had a 92. I was there doing some other stuff in the store and got called out to the range because this guy had a really bad jam. So I go out there, and sure enough, the slide is like an eighth of an inch back from battery. He said, I'm pretty sure it's fire, but I'm not sure if it's that or a live round. Oh, that's easy enough to check. Run a range rod down the barrel, measure it against. Yeah, that goes all the way to the base of the chamber. We're good. But that it would wiggle a little bit back and forth. But it was locked up, and the locking block was frozen. So finally, with a little judicious rubber mallet, turned the disassembly lever down, and with some judicious rubber mallet to the back of the slide, I got it to go forward enough that it came off.
People tend to get a little concerned when you pull out a rubber mallet to deal with their gun issues.
Oh, well, once I found out there was not a live round in the chamber, I took it back into the work area, my workbench.
Ah, okay.
But I thought you said there wasn't. Saw that. I thought you measured it and there wasn't a live round in the chamber.
Yes, as soon as I found out there wasn't.
Oh, okay.
It was safe.
I found out there was no live round on the range, and then I took it into the...
Oh, so what you're saying is that you did the rubber malleting away from prying panicked eyes.
Correct.
Okay.
And they never once saw you reach for the 6-foot breaker bar.
No, I wouldn't do that to a pistol. So I get the top end off, and when I get the top end off, multiple parts hit the bench. The slide,
that's never good.
The slide, the barrel, the recoil spring, and the guide rod all stayed together as a unit. The locking block and the plunger, however, did not.
Yeah, that's not good.
Right. So apparently the plunger got driven forward a little too far and gouged the locking block and just locked it together. So there's this nice shiny gouge on the ramp of the locking block. And you know, there's that little cross pin that holds the plunger in place, keeps it from falling out. No, not on this. There's only half of one.
Well, the good news is those are easy to source off of Bretta's website. And
oh yeah. Yeah. I told him that
the new ones last a very long time.
Well, the thing is, I think the locking block would have been fine if whatever had gone wrong with the plunger hadn't happened, because the plunger was driven. My theory is that either wrong recoil spring or loads that were too heavy for the recoil spring that was in there. So when the slide came back, the locking block was damaged at that point. And then when it slammed forward into battery, or almost into battery, it just tied it up. But
and the solution for that is to get a 1911.
Or something with a tilting or rotating barrel. There are other options than the 1911, says the man with five of them.
Yeah.
Well, Weird, you should be happy to know that I am actually seriously considering selling one of my 92s.
What? I don't understand. You sell guns?
What are you going to use the money to buy, Oddball?
Bretta 92 Elite LTT.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're not selling it, you're trading up.
Yes.
Yeah. Although I'm still not quite sure I understand this concept of selling guns. Stores do that. People don't do that.
Yeah, it is a weird concept to me as well. I think the only... I've sold two guns, one of which I'm not real sure if I sold it so much as held it for somebody for a while, because I bought a Walther P22 from Adam, and then he bought it back from me.
Did you make a profit?
No, just even trade.
Good.
And
yeah, so basically, you were storing it for him.
Yes, and the other one was also an upgrade, because I had the polymer and Panya's coming over here and checking to see if I am running a fever over the statement of selling a gun.
Thank you, Panya. We were all worried.
Whoa, what the
crap
is that?
What is What?
She just smelled the scofflaw that I'm drinking. And the other one was the polymer version of a Taurus 82 that I traded in on a Ruger LCR.
Well, there. Which one? 357?
Yeah, 357. Hmm. Which I still need to get the sights fixed because I really don't like how I really don't like the point of aim on it.
Okay, so with that silence, I guess we'll talk about the Libertarian Convention. So we can all agree that every branch has their own lunatic fringe, and the Libertarians are no exception. But I have to admire the purity of purpose behind the lunatic fringe of the Libertarians. Because, okay, when you start getting lunatic left or lunatic right, they both get very authoritarian. Whereas the Libertarians, they start off at leave me alone, and then they go, you know, all the way to like anarchy. And when you see people who are wearing t-shirts saying things like immunizations are tyranny, you go, okay, that's an interesting statement. I don't know that I specifically agree with it, but at least I understand how you got there. And they... Yes, I know. I laugh at myself. I have a picture that I circulate that it was like, it was one panel out of a four panel cartoon from a My Little Pony fan page called First Awesome Platoon. And it has basically a stoner pony and a gun-toting pony, and they've kind of got the I'm so angry I'm cross-eyed look on their faces, and it has like unintelligible screeching in the middle. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I did was I cropped that out and I put the title The Libertarian Party of the United States in one image. And the thing is, I show it to people who not only are libertarians, but they work in the party. Like the people who are there at the convention, and they look at it and they go, yeah, it's true. Because you have the gun people screaming at the weed people and vice versa. So we were at a hotel in Orlando, and we had rented out some of their convention suites. And within about 10 feet of the main convention hall was a door to the outside, to the pool. There were people out there smoking weed. Now, you can smoke medical marijuana here in Florida, I believe, but I'm also...
I saw, when I was in Florida, a sign for getting your medical card. Right. So,
but I'm also pretty sure you can't smoke it in public. I think that's only in the privacy of your own home. And, and there are people just out there. It's like, yep, we're have a break. Let's go out and blaze one. And it was just, wow, you actually give zero Fs, don't you? I don't know how the hotel, because I figured the hotel knew what was going on. They could smell it, for crying out loud. I don't know. Maybe they were paid not to care. Maybe they were sympathetic. I don't know. I thought that was really interesting. So the Libertarian Convention, it was only the state-level convention, but it was the weirdest thing I had ever seen. Because usually, with other conventions that I've been to, and I've been to state level Republican conventions before, and there's a whole lot of pomp and circumstance is not the right word, but well, you know, it was a Republican convention. You know, men were wearing suits and ties, and women were wearing dresses, and you know, things are done a certain way, and we have a responsibility. And I don't know what it's like at a Democrat convention, but here at the Libertarian, so the opening ceremonies were done with a comedian telling off-color jokes, which, oh my God, I'm not going to repeat here. I'm not even going to repeat them like on a mag dump, because it's like, this is the sort of thing where even if I'm quoting, the fact that it's in my voice could be used against me later. And it was
I worked at a college bar. I've heard those types of jokes.
Yeah. And it was just like, holy crap, they're actually saying this. And then they declared, then they started auctioning things off in order to raise money, and they auctioned like a, y'all remember the thing about the banana duct taped to the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they brought
the
in a can
laundering scheme.
Yeah, so they brought in a canvas with a banana taped to it, and they auctioned that off. And then I don't know if they legitimately did this because I didn't see the exchange, or if it was just a joke, but they apparently auctioned off, I'm not sure how many ounces of weed that someone flew in from Colorado. Really, guns and weed are going to be a recurring theme. And then they had, and I'm not kidding, they had open mic night. They sold minutes. It was like $1 per minute. And people would get up and they would say things or tell jokes. And there was one guy, he was like really upset because he had been told that during the debates, they had been asked to curtail the swearing. And so he dropped every conceivable profanity known to man multiple times during the opening ceremonies. And yeah, I'm sitting there. And it's just like, this is unbelievable. This does not seem like a political convention. This is somewhere between a frat party and a nightclub. And then my buddy Adrian Rook, who weird knows, and you know, is a fellow revolver fetishist. I mean, he's sitting next to me because he helped me staff the booth, because we were there like Friday night, all of Saturday, Sunday morning, and well into the afternoon. I mean, Saturday we were there from like 8 to 10. It was a long shift. But he's sitting next to me, and he kind of nudges me, and he head tilts someone sitting next to me, and it's like, I don't know who this person is. And so he sends me a screenshot of the guy with a boot superimposed over his head, and it's like, wait, that's Vermin? Because the guy sitting next to me, he looked like, he looked older than a crazy uncle, but younger than a kindly grandfather. And he was wearing a suit and not a boot. And it was just like, wait, that's him? I'll try to pull it off my phone at some point. And it's like, wow, that doesn't, it was literally, I didn't recognize him without the boot.
It was
literally the whole Clark Kent Superman with the glasses on and off. It's like, holy crap, it's real.
It's like that fur mantle he wears as well.
I'm sorry, the what he wears?
He wears like a fur mantle as well.
He wasn't this time, although he does sometimes. And so, you know, he went up and he did a routine, and it was that. It was performance art, and he was having the audience sing along to a song called Psycho Kitty.
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
I'm sorry?
Was it a rewording of Psycho Killer?
I don't know.
Oh, never mind.
And then he was, you know, then he did this pony, you know, I've got a pony, my pony likes to buck, something, something, something. And it was just, this guy is a presidential contender. Admittedly, he's been doing this for 30 years, and most of it is performance satire, but he is still here being given space to debate on this state-level stage in preparation for the national level, and he's a candidate who's up there dancing and singing, and Psycho Kitty! Psycho Kitty!
Okay, it's a different song.
And it's just, I get the feeling, it was like, this is what it's like being stoned. It was bizarre and eye-opening and kind of transcendental in terms of pure weirdness. Just what the hell? And so then it broke, and people were coming up to Vermin and they wanted photographs, and it's like, oh, let me get the boot. And so it's like, okay, well, you know, because he's the, you know, I'm going to take away your guns and give you better guns, plus ponies for everybody. And so, okay, guns and ponies, that is my jam. And my friend Adrian had because he's a nerd like me. He runs 5th edition D&D, and he came up with a way to have firearms in D&D without breaking the genre. And he's got this rule thing called Fantasy Firearms. And he made a special one for me with my pony on the front and the OBS logo on the back. And it was like, I absolutely have to get a picture of me standing next to Vermin Supreme as we hold the Fantasy Firearms, you know, pony with the flintlock. And I asked him, and he said, absolutely. Bronies have been very helpful to my campaign. It's like, he knows who bronies are. And he posed. And I've got a photograph, which you guys have seen by this point. And it was like, that was really cool. And then later, he came in and he posed in front of our booth because people wanted to take pictures with him. And he used our Pink Pistols logo as a backdrop. And I am absolutely not going to complain. If he wants to endorse us,
I saw a couple
fantastic.
Of those pictures. That was awesome.
Nice. And then there's one with me, and we're making finger guns. And he dropped his duffel bag in front, and it was actually in the camera shot, and I squealed like a little girl because he has a My Little Pony duffel bag. It's pink, and it's got Rainbow Dash and I think Fluttershy and Pinkie Pie on it, and it was just, oh my god, you actually can't, you knew the pony had to run! It was so cool, and so that was great. He's obviously, Vermin Supreme is not his real name. I didn't ask what his real name is because I didn't want to know.
Well, technically, it is his legal name.
Oh my god, he's legally changed it.
And I actually did some research before the show, and supposedly there is someone who allegedly knows his real name and is trying to expose it, and he is fighting back to make sure that his real name does not get exposed.
Oh wow. Okay. So I asked him how long he's been doing this. He says he's been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah, he's been doing it for a long time.
So, I mean, you know, this is performance. This is political satire. And so he's got his public persona and his private persona. And so his public persona is what you see. You know, he's wild and crazy. And then he takes off the boot, and it's just like, this is just an ordinary guy. And I don't mean ordinary as in boring. It's like, you know, he's nice. He's soft-spoken. He's really easy to be around. And I was like, that is so cool. Even when the mask comes off, you are a cool person. I like that. And that was really cool. And admittedly, I didn't get deep into the politics because I was staffing a table. And I didn't get any bad reception at all. First time that ever happened. Because, I mean, if I'm at Pride, then I'm getting stink eye because of guns. Or if I'm at a gun event, I'm getting stink eye because of tegays.
Evil queer.
Yes. But this is the first time people are going up. It's like, I got no problem with this. In fact, I'm glad to see you here. This is awesome. Because the Libertarian Party is the only party that endorses queer rights and gun rights as part of its platform. And I really wish OBS, well, OBS is a 501c3, and we can't endorse candidates. I wish we could, because, you know, this is the party that gets us, and that's as close as I can get to anything. But yeah, they are such nice people, even if they are kind of weird and fighty and, you know, guns and dope and things like that. But I had a great time. One last thing before I stop talking and hand off to the other people. I got to meet the philosopher.
I was going to prompt that if you didn't bring it up.
And yes, I did not misspeak. Although it's probably pronounced philosopher, because the Vietnamese dish pho with the little over the o is more properly pronounced pho. But if I say the philosopher, people are going to say the philosopher. What do you mean? So the philosopher. And she is tiny.
Absolutely adorable.
She is absolutely. It was like, I just want to put you in my purse and take you home. You're just so cute. I mean, I don't even know if she's 5 foot, but she is just absolutely sweet. And people were wondering what's her status on queer people. Let me tell you, she came over to us. It's not like we approached her. She came to us. She said, you know, it's really great that you're here. I appreciate what you're doing. Can I get a picture with you? She wanted a picture of me and the Pink Pistols. And so that should tell you everything you need to know. And just, just absolutely a sweetheart. And so if you don't know who she is, look her up. She's just this little tiny Vietnamese gal. And she, well, she likes to wear the ANCAP colors. Anarchy capitalism? Anarchic capitalism?
Anarcho-capitalist.
Anarcho-capitalist. There you go.
Basically, if there is any type of financial interaction, it needs to be completely voluntary.
And I'm going to break a lot of people's hearts here. She's married. Yeah, I know. Because I think a lot of people follow her because, oh, she's cute and she's a girl. And it's like, yes, she is, but she's happily married. I met her husband. Her husband actually, and I don't remember his name, but...
Please tell me it was 6'4".
I'm a terrible judge of height. He was obviously taller than she was, but...
Just to be more ridiculous than me and Ponya, because I think the philosopher is shorter than Ponya.
I believe so. I mean, we could do some math. It's like, I'm 5'4". I was wearing like 3-inch heels. You can measure how tall she was, and then we can, you know... Anyway, but her husband... And I think she helped as well. They've got a comic book out called The Voluntarist. And, you know, it's an ANCAP superhero, which I haven't read. I didn't know anything about it. But yeah, so they were selling that swag as well. So just met some really fun people. Met someone who Oleg knew from SHOT Show. And it's like, hey, that's cool because, you know, he came up and he liked the booth and... And he handed me his card, and it's like, I don't know, was it Pitbull Tactical, Bulldog Tactical, something like that. And it's like, I think
actually both of those exist. So
it, well, it's sure. Like, I think I know you. Are you the guy who makes the Universal magazine holder? And he says, well, we make magazine holders. And it's like, didn't Oleg talk about you and meet you at a SHOT Show? It's like, oh, yeah, you know Oleg? Yes, I know Oleg. Yeah. And so the
Universal magazine carrier, I believe that's Pitbull Tactics.
Okay. And so we bonded over knowing Oleg, and he loves our...
Because Oleg knows everybody.
Yes, I know. Oleg is the Intelzah. He knows everyone. Kids, ask your parents. and so, you know, he wants to help, and, you know, OBS might have gotten a new sponsor. Who knows? So
nice.
Yeah, it was really awesome. And people who were at the convention asked if I was going to be at the national convention, which is going to be in Austin in May. And I don't know. On the one hand, the exposure would be fantastic. On the other hand, it's expensive to get there. And I don't know how I'd get the table because the tables are like $500. And because it's a political party, OBS can't buy the table because that would be a political donation. Right. Someone would have to buy it for us. And that's a big ask. On the other hand, I might ask the guy from Pitbull Tactical.
Is one of those tables?
They quoted me. No, they didn't quote. They said, well, we think it might be as much as $500.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not exactly pocket change, but...
On one hand, honestly, isn't bad. On the other hand, is still $500.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. On the other hand...
I'll spend more than that on a knife.
Yeah. So, I...
I haven't broken that plane yet.
Well, you can tell that story as soon as I finish here, and I'm like 30 seconds away. So this is something that I definitely want to pursue, but it's like, I am too tired right now and I need to rest and I need to run it past the board of directors and the corporate council. And there may be something I'm missing. There may be a way to be there, but just that level of national exposure would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cool.
I'm done, and now no one wants to talk. I thought we were talking about the $500 knife.
I wanted to make sure we were clear. Speaking, for per usual, I have come over prepared for this round table. I picked out a whole bunch of news stories and for us to discuss. And honestly speaking, we've gone for we're over an hour on our time. It'll compress a little bit down.
I added a few links in there as well.
But hey, Weird, do you have any questions about Vermin Supreme for me? Because you wanted to hear about him.
I think you got all of the stuff in there? Because the big thing I had for that, so I mean, I identify as a libertarian, but at the same time, it's one of those, like, it's super foolishness for the, you know, and of course I voted for Gary Johnson twice in a row, once as a, oh my gosh, he's running a really good campaign, second on the, well, it's either him or Trump or Hillary, I guess I'll vote for him. Mm-hmm. Or Jill Stein. Again, you've got like the Green Party and you've got the Libertarian Party, or the perennial, you know, third parties, so to speak. I mean, third and fourth party. Let's not play favorites. But the big thing I was getting is the, all right, there's someone who's running as a Democrat and there's someone who's running as a Republican, and there is a bench behind them. There are senators and representatives and governors and city councilors and aldermen and all of these things that are members of this party versus libertarians, where, I mean, I've got to assume, like, around Keene, New Hampshire, there are some, like, some state representatives that are that are libertarian. I mean, it's just, it's the Free State Project is so big that I would be embarrassed if there wasn't. But then it's one of those, like, but there's, like, there's no libertarian dog catchers. There's no libertarian, like, national senators. There's no libertarian governors. There's no libertarian. I don't even know if there's a libertarian mayor. There might be. There's enough towns out there that maybe there's one, but I'm not aware of one. And yet suddenly we're going to run for president. And so it's just one of those, like, that's
one of my pet peeves.
Well, yeah. Gary Johnson was a libertarian governor.
Yeah, but they really need to go.
He was a Republican, wasn't he? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
he was. So, I mean, that's the big thing.
Oh, yes, he was a Republican at the time. That's okay. Thank you.
So when I was in Maine, Angus King, who is actually now the senator from Maine, was there, and like Bernie Sanders, he is a perennial independent.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the state of Maine, he got absolutely nothing done as governor because the Republicans hated him because he caucused with the Democrats, and he is effectively a Democrat, much like Bernie Sanders is. He's running as a Democrat, and allegedly he's a Democrat, though there's some question on that, which would be very interesting, especially if it's the nominee for the Democrat for president, who is not actually a Democrat, and not like Donald Trump or Michael Bloomberg, who was one, then was a different one, then was another one. No, I don't think he's ever actually been an actual Democrat. Bernie Sanders does caucus with the Democrats and overall fits in quite nicely with the Democrats. I mean, for certain values to fit in. And Angus King was the exact same way. So the Republicans didn't like him because they just said, you know what? He's a Democrat. Just because he's got an I next to his name doesn't mean he's not a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats hated him because he wasn't a party man. I mean,
which is hysterical because he's a party man.
I mean, yes, but no. I mean, it's one of those, like,
not the Democrat Party.
Oh,
the Communist Party. Yeah.
Oh, well, Bernie has yes.
Yes.
I'm talking about Gus King here, but
sorry. But I missed the segue.
Yeah, to quote the Beyonce, you know, if you loved it, you would have put a ring on it. He didn't put a ring on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, they never actually trusted him because he was not one of them. And so, again, the idea of, no matter how much of a libertarian I am, the idea of, like, a libertarian president. It, like, right now, if Vermin Supreme got elected president, I mean, number one, he's not going to, because not only are there dog catchers and aldermen and city councilors and small town mayors who are Democrats and Republicans, there are just registered voters as that. And there are, I'm sure there's actually quite a few registered voters who are libertarian, but compared to Democrats and Republicans, it's next to nothing. And when you realize mm-hmm. that, it's just, people aren't just going to just completely split with their party to vote for a third party just by nature, because if they were willing to do that, they would have also gone forward and been a third party themselves.
I absolutely agree. And I have said this to people. I'm not really sure why they are trying to win the presidential race in a Hail Mary when it seems to me they need to concentrate on local things and have libertarian mayors and libertarian city councilmen and libertarian state level representatives. And then we'll have
build the grassroots first.
Yes.
Build
and, the foundation. And then, okay, we elect a libertarian governor, and you have I can run a state, here's my track record, and then you can have libertarian presidential candidates who people will have heard of and will actually be serious contenders.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why they don't do that.
So you said, I can run a town, I can run a county, I can run a state.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's take a look at building beyond that.
Uh-huh.
But no, it's like the kids who graduate college with a degree in underwater basket weaving and expect to get the job at the vice president level.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's not how that works.
Yeah. But so that was my one, essentially my big question is, I see Vermin Supreme and I see him with the boot and the toothbrush and the little fur mantle, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And I gotta say, you know, as everyone knows my love for Gigi Allen, and Gigi Allen was absolutely an avant-garde performance artist in that sense. On the, even off the stage, it was still going on. Maybe some of it wasn't an act, but I personally believe he was creating the image that he felt was best for the act, and the world was his stage. And I see Vermin Supreme as that way, and I'm like, you know what? More power to him. But the bottom line is, well, at a libertarian convention, was he a serious person? And
yes.
And Aaron, without me asking you.
Well, I it depends on the topic. Sometimes he fully let the freak out. But when it came time for the debate, he took the boot off, you know? And really? It was almost like that was the equivalent of a woman putting her hair up in a ponytail. It's like,
oh, she gonna get real now.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, you in trouble. So I love that Wonder Woman Batman comic or cartoon.
Yeah.
For those who don't know what I'm talking about, there's a comic making the rounds which shows Wonder Woman with a really annoyed look on her face and a scrunchie in her mouth, pulling her hair back, with Batman crouching behind her saying, ooh, you done in trouble now. She getting the hair scrunchie. Or it's probably, you're going to get in trouble now. She's gotten the hair scrunchy.
Yeah, I prefer the Michael Keaton Batman.
I have found it. Give me just a moment to drop it in channel, and then you'll be able to see it for yourself.
And I'll put it in the show notes.
Of course yes. You will.
Because I'll have to fish through all the other show notes that we have made.
Yep, that's like, the one.
That is hilarious.
Yes. It's even funnier if you've actually seen a woman do that in real life before she
stuff
got real.
Oh yeah.
Oh, weird. It's you're going to have to edit.
If the sugar wasn't getting real at you.
Yeah, it's definitely when it's going at other people.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because it's not happening to us.
I'm uprange.
Or upwind or whatever.
Well, I got to say, I did want to, I am willing to forego a bunch of these news stories, but one of them, we don't really need to go into too long, but I had to talk about really quickly, especially since it brings this kind of back into Michael Bloomberg's candidacy as well, is one of the founding members of March for Our Lives, Delaney Tarr, has endorsed Bernie Sanders. And not only endorsed Bernie Sanders, but thrown a bunch of shade at Mike Bloomberg, specifically a money quote from this article that's in the show notes. I am very proud of the Democratic Party for making it clear last night that Mike Bloomberg cannot buy our votes.
Yeah, I actually saw that. That was making the rounds during the convention, and they didn't specify the person. It was just, you know, specified that March for Our Lives endorsed Bernie, and my jaw dropped. It's like, but March for Our Lives is a Bloomberg organization. How did this happen?
To be fair, she is endorsing him as an independent person. I think the big thing is, so again, March for Our Lives absolutely is trademarked by Everytown. It is a conglomeration of Everytown. It is the same as Moms Demand Action. It is privately
owned extension of the Bloomberg brand.
Mm-hmm. But I think after the actual March for Our Lives on Washington, D.C., which was a big, very heavily funded march funded by Michael Bloomberg, and the idea was that was going to bring across sweeping gun control because we have to listen to children. It clearly didn't work. Sorry, that fizzled. After that, I think Bloomberg kind of abandoned it. And of course, also at about the same time that he was winding down with March for Our Lives, he further stepped back and went, "Oh, I'm running for president." And that was when a lot of the Bloomberg mouthpieces kind of went dark. Like Moms Demand Action, they're going up, they're standing up for gun control, they're showing up on that, but you're not seeing any sort of like big publicity stunts or anything like that. The Trace
is doing some in Nashville.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I was going to say they've shown up in my town, not a whole lot of them, but they showed up.
No, they do some invading of legislators' offices in Nashville.
Yeah, but are they getting lots of news time?
In Nashville, yes,
but okay. In Knoxville as well.
Okay,
because it's local, the state news.
I think
you're right. National, they've just kind of gone zip.
Because I think, I mean, again, Bloomberg knows that he's been peppered with all these as they're of, despite the fact that he keeps changing names. Because of course, Everytown is Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which was founded by Michael Bloomberg predominantly because mm-hmm. the co-founder, which was Tom Menino, who is the mayor of Boston, can't actually read or write.
Isn't the Mayors Against Gun Violence thing or whatever? Isn't Bloomberg one of the few that's not gone to jail now?
Only a matter of time, judging by Michael Bloomberg's behavior.
I believe it was Bloomberg that nationally announced that he was ordering people to commit identity theft to go buy guns across state lines.
Oh yeah, yeah. He hired people to go commit straw purchases. How that doesn't violate the RICO Act, I still don't know. I mean, that's hiring people to commit felonies across state lines.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a bunch of anti-gun groups have done that.
Right. And how is that not criminal? I mean, actionably.
Because they do it and they commit the RICO acts in jurisdictions that are sympathetic to their cause. You have to break a few eggs to make an omelet.
Yeah. They've broken a lot of eggs and we still don't have any omelets.
Well, yes, but again, just like the gun violence prevention movement that doesn't actually prevent any violence actually makes it worse.
Well, no, that's not its purpose. Yeah. Its purpose is to create enough violence that the state can do more.
But yeah, but again, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, again, as you pointed out, a whole bunch of their members got sent to federal prison for corruption and it really just wasn't working
out. At least a couple of them for firearm crimes.
Yeah. And he rebranded it as Everytown and got it a nice, fresh, updated look. And then
Michael Bloomberg's Everytown for a gun.
Yeah. Shannon Watts claims to be a stay-at-home mom and formed a Facebook group, except for pretty much Moms Demand Action immediately got rolled under Everytown as a subsidiary.
And she was also a legal counsel for Monsanto or something like that.
Yes. And she did run a home office for I think a couple of years. So she was working from home. She was not a stay at home mom. And
words have meanings.
Yes, exactly. And she quit that job. And so that could be the become a stay-at-home mom situation, except for 6 months later, she is now running Moms Demand Action. So
right, and then there was the Juden group.
To tie in, I would state that evidence would stay instead of her becoming a stay-at-home mom only for 6 months, because again, if you're one of those, you quit your high-paying job to stay home with your kids. If another job comes around, wouldn't you still just stay home with your kids? Isn't that
well? It depends on what your priority is.
Yeah, I would argue that, in fact, Bloomberg offered to pay her more and she quit the other job to work for Bloomberg, and then they lied in wait until a school shooting happened. And I believe that's the exact same thing as I believe that March for Our Lives was formed, and then they just lied in wait for a school shooting to happen. Because I gotta say, for a tactical standpoint, and I feel ghoulish saying this, but a school shooting as horrific as Sandy Hook is a really good springboard for a blood dancing political springboard.
Never let a tragedy go to waste.
Exactly. But on the other hand, I would say that the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting is the absolute worst school shooting to hang your hat on, because literally
the government failed at every single step.
You're asking for the government to step in for more gun control to save lives, and literally the government failed in every opportunity for it to fail.
Yep.
The killer committed multiple acts of domestic violence over the course of several years. So
he had what, 37 or 39 law enforcement visits? I thought it was
32, but in the
30 30s, something. Yeah, 30 way something.
Way more than any of us combined.
Yeah.
Including hell, there were a couple times that he literally begged them to lock him up.
Yes. Yep. And was
also people at the school, both students and faculty, saying this guy's not safe. I mean, he was banned from the being on school grounds because of violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so and
the government did nothing.
By the way, yeah, he should have been arrested for domestic violence and become a prudent person. He should have been put away for mental illness for all the various things. He should have been put in jail for threats,
et cetera. I mean, we could go on.
Exactly. There's so many things that could have been done. I mean, the FBI should have been investigating him when he told people he wanted to shoot up his school, but they didn't. And then when he finally did shoot up his school, the police should have engaged him and shot him before he killed all those students and cleared the scene so the EMTs could come in and help the people that were wounded who later bled to death.
Mm-hmm. Which also brings us around to Pulse again, mm-hmm. where the kind of similar thing happened.
Exactly. These are instances where the people that you're going to be empowering with gun control laws are the exact people that made it worse. And so, no, I don't trust the government. That's why I carry a gun, because I trust me. Mm-hmm. Who's going to protect my wife and kid and daughter? It's going to be me. I will fight to the very, very end to save them. Will a police officer do that? I wouldn't do it for some other stranger.
To turn this around on a lighter note,
please.
What you're saying is, do you remember when the federal government, due to taxes or something, took over a brothel in Nevada?
I actually mentioned this in an interview. Yes. It was it the Mustang Ranch?
I think so.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the story was the guy didn't pay taxes, so they took the business in lieu of taxes and then ran it into the ground. Literally, they were selling sex in a state where it was legal to sell sex, and they ran it into the ground.
They mismanaged a brothel into bankruptcy.
Yes, this is the government. Bing. But one of the links that I tossed on the show notes that I wanted to particularly mention, because there's been a lot of stuff going around about it, with all of the insanity going on in Virginia lately, there were a lot of stories saying that Virginia was no longer going to recognize pistol licenses issued outside Virginia. Somebody mentioned this, so I went and I took a look, and on the Virginia police website, vsp.virginia.gov, there is a page for firearm reciprocity, and according to the Virginia State Police, it is still good. As of July 1st, 2016, pursuant to Virginia Code, blah, 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 the holder of a valid concealed handgun or concealed weapon permit or license issued by another state may carry a concealed handgun in Virginia. As long as they're 21 years of age, they've got their photo ID, they display it to law enforcement on demand, and it's never been revoked. Or, I'm sorry, never had a Virginia concealed handgun permit revoked. That is the current law that is still being held to, still being followed. If you have a permit to carry from your state, pardon me, you can still go to Virginia and you're legal.
Good.
That's just, I have a pet peeve with people spreading hysteria where it's not warranted.
Yeah.
No, yeah. There were a few years ago, there was one bill that was coming out that people were claiming would do all sorts of crazy things. And in one group, I finally said, okay, I must be missing something. Someone cite to me.
Here's a link to the proposed bill. Please show me text what you're talking about.
Yeah, and they couldn't do it.
No, because they're full of stuff.
They kept saying, well, the bill does X, Y, Z. It's okay, show me in the bill where it does that.
Yep.
And there were a couple folks that actually did admit that they didn't know what sight meant.
Ooh.
Well, as you may remember, when what's his name? Gabby Giffords' husband, the astronaut.
Mark Giffords.
Mark? I couldn't remember his first
name. I thought it was Mark.
Mark Kelly. Yeah. Not R. Kelly, Mark Kelly. anyway, Gabby Giffords' husband, they were going around and doing their gun control shtick shortly after she was recovered from being shot. And they showed up at a gun show in Saratoga, New York, and went in. And there were a couple of pictures posted in the paper, one of which showed Mark holding a revolver in the gun show. Now, here's the thing. In New York state law, it is illegal to touch a handgun, period. You are exempted from that if you have a valid New York state pistol license. That's it. There's very little else. If you are at an NRA certified shooting event, not just range, but event and a few other things like that. But walking around a gun show, no, if you're not from New York and you don't have a New York state pistol license, you just committed a crime. And I made a comment about that. And one of my friends said, trying to push it off like, oh, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. Could you please point to the part of the law where it says what he's doing is a crime? I'm like, well, I will admit to a little hyperbole, and then I listed the three sections of New York state law that dealt with a non-licensee handling a handgun in the state of New York. And that pretty much was the end of that conversation.
Well, and that's also why I've appreciated in the past when I have told you some of the wackier things about Tennessee law, your reaction was, really? Can you show me where it does that?
Please show me the site. But for two reasons. One, because I'm honestly curious. And two, I teach the permit class. This might have bearing.
Right, yeah.
And I want the real information. And I know that you're not going to just say something because it sounds good or scary or whatever. You're going to have the information.
Especially when I say things like, yes, it's illegal to carry a stick for self-defense.
With the intention of going armed. I love that phrase.
Yeah, without a special permit.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yes, can carry a knife, can carry a gun, but can't carry a stick.
And yes, my handgun carry permit is only good for handguns. It's right. Not good for anything else, like a stick.
Right. Other states have a LWP, license weapon permit, or something like that.
Yeah, Florida has a concealed weapon permit. And
right.
Yeah, it does specify knives and clubs and stun guns and yeah.
Right. Tennessee, it is a license to carry a handgun.
Ooh, can you carry blackjacks in Florida?
Okay.
Only in a casino. Hey-o!
I want to say yes, but I also want to give you good advice. So that's a provisional. I think so, but let me check the law.
Yeah, I'll look it up as well because I have a sap because I like detective novels.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
But it's illegal to carry in Massachusetts and many states. Blackjacks and saps are kind of like switchblades. They're just one of those. Yeah, there's nothing really particularly different or weird about them, but for some reason they got that special sauce of being extra illegally.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, one of my martial arts classes, I was a student, and the instructor asked, "Say, okay, so you know this type of attack, what else do you think people could be attacking you with, and I volunteered a sap, and my instructor said, yes, but when was the last time you saw one of, who here has actually seen someone carrying one of those?
And you raised your hand.
And I raised my hand, and I got some strange looks and said, yeah, I have some strange friends.
Yes. On another bright note, since we got kind of dark and deep in there a little bit, one of the links that was added to the notes was from Lincoln, Nebraska. Did anyone take a look at that?
I saw it, but why don't you give us a summary?
Basically, Lincoln, Nebraska, they were looking to pass a bill that would require anyone buying a handgun to wait 48 hours and 5 days when getting a permit from the sheriff's office. Hundreds of people, as the article says, hundreds of men and women swarmed the state capitol to protest a number of bills they believe infringe on their Second Amendment rights. And basically, a lot of this just, okay, never mind. But what? Yeah, it was just people showed up. They made their voices heard, and the gun grabbers at least temporarily backed down.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good one. I mean, we see in Virginia the odds, but again, this is Bloomberg has declared that Virginia is going to go his way by hook or by crook, just like he's declaring that he will be going for president. I mean, I think that if he gets shellacked in gets fourth or fifth place in on Super Tuesday in all the states, he's not going to drop out the next day. He's going to keep going,
and that's what we want.
Yeah,
we want little Mikey to keep his attention on this as opposed to
every one of those obnoxious Bloomberg ads you see is dollars he's not spending on taking away your guns.
Okay, yep. Weird. I have an answer for you.
Ooh.
For the purposes of this section, which is Florida Statute 790.06. For the purpose of the section, concealed weapons or concealed firearms are defined as a handgun, electronic weapon or device, tear gas gun, knife, or billy.
Billy.
So, billy club. I'm not sure if a blackjack is substantially different from a billy. I would say if they let you carry a club, then you could probably carry a slapper or kosh or whatever. But it's not specified there in the law. Let me see if I can find the legal definition for what a billy is.
Another name for a goat.
A nickname for William.
Of course, here in another section, concealed weapon means any dirk, metallic knuckles, billy, tear gas gun, chemical weapon or device, or other deadly weapon.
Yeah.
So, I would... So on the one hand, I would say it's covered, but I am not a lawyer. And, you know, exact words, Greg, a cop might view it differently and arrest you. But,
Go to Florida. Be the test case. Come on, weird.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I think we should thank our Patreon patrons and all of our listeners. Thank you for tuning in to the Sun Calibers podcast on this wonderful round table. We have a very fried Aaron Collette.
I'm a pretty, pretty pony.
And we have a also very fried oddball.
And I've got to go to another center in the morning.
And we have an always like that, David.
I'm not fried. I'm half baked.
You should be a libertarian. You could be fully baked. Hey-o!
Ho!
And meanwhile, for most of today, I was miserable, but now recording a podcast, and I am alive! So, our energy levels are assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks.